Greetings and welcome to The Thirsty Mage, the podcast that has been waiting years for this pixel-related episode. I'm your host, David Lloyd, and this will be the first in a series of episodes devoted to the Final Fantasy pixel remasters that are now finally available on two out of the three major consoles anyway, along with the Steam versions that have been out for a couple years now. We're not necessarily going to go through them in order because that would make too much sense. But we are starting with the OG, the game that started it all, Final Fantasy on the NES. And here to debate on whether four black belts can survive the Marsh Cave, it's Jordan Rudick.
They couldn't the first time I went in there, so I can tell you that much. But definitely needed to grind up a little bit. In a way, it does make sense for us to start with this one, too, just because, you know, for us, this was one of our first role-playing games. And we'd been talking about, you know, when for the Pixel Remasters for such a long time that I think kind of breaking it down into individual episodes just makes sense for us. Obviously, we're going to play all of them. I did purchase the collection when it came out. So I ended up buying all six.
Right, on Switch?
Yeah, I think you can get them separately, but you do get a nice discount for buying them all together. The price in Canadian was $99 or just over $100 maybe for the all six. And I think if you buy them separately, I think it's an extra $20-$25 or something. So you get like a game and a half for free, I guess, if you buy them all together at once. So. Yeah, so I ended up buying all of them. Reviewed three. That's an NWR. I did a review in progress for six. I'll add a score to that soon, so people can check those out. But
six wasn't one of the three that you already have a review for?
I did a review in progress just because like we didn't get a code until launch day, I guess, or maybe a couple days before launch. So I ended up taking six and three, and I just kind of plowed through six just to get some impressions up. So that's hence the review in progress moniker. I played a bunch of it.
You reviewed three. I don't know why I had it in my head. I'm like, I reviewed three of them. I heard.
Yeah, no. FF3, which we're going to talk about soon.
FF3. Okay. Yeah. I knew you did that one.
Yeah. So I gave that one a score. And then FF6, there's the review in progress. I'm going to score that soon. But yeah. And then so me, Neil, and Donald, we each took two of them. That's how we kind of divided it up. But obviously it was a long time coming. Kind of expected them to eventually hit consoles at some point. They did. It almost made sense that they didn't come out last year because Square's catalog was just so massive for 2022. Yeah. And it's almost a nice kind of palate cleanser lead up to FF16, you know, going to play a bunch of the original games. And then we've got FF16 coming next month. So kind of nice to do that. And then, of course, you know, these are just seminal titles for us at the Thirsty Mage. So, going to do individual kind of episodes on each one. And I'm looking forward to, once again, revisiting one of our kind of classic favorite games.
I guess I'll start with saying I'm shocked at the amount of sales. I think the last thing I saw was like 2 million sales of the Pixel Remaster on the consoles when they came. I don't know if that was like the combined PC and consoles, or if that was just the consoles, but either way, if you would have asked me before they came out how much, I would have thought like $500,000, something like that. I underestimated just how popular these games are, especially with one of the things that made me think that these weren't coming to consoles is just the pricing. They went and did it. They said, you know, screw it, $99 if you want them all. I didn't think they'd go over the traditional numbers that they typically go with. But everything's now that Breath of the Wild is $89.99 Canadian. It's the Wild West now for pricing, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, this is kind of started with the PS5 coming out, right? And it led to that $10 increase in the price of AAA games, right? Like that was almost the start of it. But I mean, I think you've seen companies experiment with physical releases that are, $49 or $39 or something, or collections that end up going above $59, $69, $79. You know, like I don't think companies are so tied down to like one set price point for your game. I think there's a lot more flexibility now, especially with digital releases too. It almost makes sense to just, here's what we think the game will sell for, and if they need to drop the price, they'll drop the price, and that'll happen. But yeah, I can understand, wanting to You know, maybe be a little hesitant about the release just because it is kind of a funny way of putting out these games, I guess. I think Paige got a physical version of this, or she's maybe still waiting on one to come.
I think it just came in recently. Okay, I think I saw a tweet with the picture of it.
Nice.
I think it came in the day before she got Tears of the Kingdom.
Oh, gosh, of course. Yeah. Worst timing ever. That all kind of make sense. And but yeah, I'm just happy these games are here. Like it's really nice to just have them available, you know, on more places, more people picking them up. I wouldn't be surprised if they did well. I think that there was just so much kind of pent up demand after they got announced for Steam and mobile that a lot of people were going to be really excited for them to eventually come to Switch and PS4 as they did. So, got the Switch versions. They look good there. I have very few complaints. You know, we'll get into some of the, quality of life, features of the games, you know, how they feel to play in 2023. Cause I think that's the biggest theme, for me of this whole collection is, how does it feel to play these games, you know, decades after they first came out? Like, yeah, you can put like a nice fresh coat of paint on them, but these games were originally developed, in the 80s and the 90s, right? So it's a totally different ball game now to just kind of bring them forward without too much change. So how do we feel going through them again? I think that's something I'm kind of wrestling with a little bit, or I've been thinking about.
Yeah, well, definitely with like the ethos back in the early 90s for these NES games, especially during like the rental era, where it's like the game wasn't meant to be played in 10 hours or 15 hours. Like it was set up back in the day to be played in like 20 to 50, depending on how much time you put in. So it's definitely requires some fine tuning to kind of be palatable in today's atmosphere, especially when you're looking at like pixel games. I think I'm just like going through all the different versions in my head. Like I remember, you know, we've got the original, we got the Final Fantasy that came on like the NES Classic. You got the Dawn of Souls on the DS. There was, I think,
GBA. GBA, Dawn of Souls 1 and 2. Yep. Yeah.
There's, I'm not going to legally admit that I played ROMs, but they are out there.
Of course not.
So like I probably played. Oh, and then there's the PS. I never get if it's like Final Fantasy Anthology or something, whatever the PS revision was called that came with like 1 and 2. I think were on the same disc or something.
PSP,
like,
is that right?
PSP version? Had a version. Yeah. So there, you know,
there too.
I'm sure I played more versions of the original than I have fingers on my hand.
Yeah,
and so I'm curious for you, where does this version lie in that kind of spectrum of all the games that you've played?
I think so. Just thinking about the reception to these games in general, and like one of the critiques, one of the issues is that they're missing content, right? Like a lot of these Final Fantasy games in later re-releases would get bonus dungeons or just extra scenes or movies or, you know, things like that added to them. Something at the end of the game for players to maybe challenge themselves with. So those kinds of content additions are not part of the pixel remasters. These are very much like the original games as they came out, but now just kind of HDified and then with some quality of life features thrown in. So for that reason, like you can't really call them definitive, right? They're not definitive because these games had more content at some point in their lifespan that just isn't here. And, you know, you wonder maybe why that is. Why did they choose to omit that? I don't know. But maybe just to focus on, again, how they look, how they feel, but not necessarily like that they are the be all end all. So just kind of at the end of the day, I think these are very, very good entry points. Absolutely. Like if you've never played a Final Fantasy game, I think these are probably the way to go. Just cause I think the way that they look, I think the quality of life stuff in 2023 is really, really welcome. You know, we can get into the list of things here. Like you can turn on an automatic run ability so that your characters are always sprinting in towns, dungeons, things like that. And that wasn't a part of any of the games. You know, in Final Fantasy VI, you could get a running. You could make your characters run by equipping a relic, sprint shoes. They may have changed in another version, but for me, it was the sprint shoes in the Super Nintendo version. And but adding that, you know, just really makes dungeons a lot easier to navigate and not so cumbersome. And I really like that. Even if the dungeons like the Marsh Cave, like you're kind of blowing through that by just through sprinting. And yes, you might get into more random encounters, but the whole experience of being in that one place just doesn't feel as grating, maybe. Obviously, the number, you know, the best quality of life features that they've added are the ability to turn off random encounters, which you can do just by at the touch of a button, basically. You can increase the amount of experience points and gold, and in the games that have it, the ability or job kind of job points that you earn in FF6, for example, with learning magic through the Esper system. All of that can be tweaked, right? You can decrease it, increase it up to 4 times. And then, yeah, again, the addition of turning off random encounters whenever you wish. I think that, to me, that stuff is very, very valuable. Like, I really appreciate when re-releases bring in changes like that. You know, I think that does make it, again, it's not the same experience you had when these games first came out, but it does feel like a modern contemporary one. And again, these are all options. Like, you don't need to use them if you don't want it. You can still have that classic experience. But if you're just trying to revisit something, or, you know, you want to kind of spend maybe less time there so you can get to the next game. We've all got more games we want to play. I mean, how do you not love the addition of changes like that?
Well, you could always buy the Steam versions because they haven't been updated with any of those things yet. I don't have any of those things that you mentioned on my playthrough.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because I don't know, other than like maybe the font issue, which we'll talk about in a second. Like, I don't know what else is missing or different from the Steam version. And I think those boost features are supposed to be coming, but I don't know when.
Yeah, they're supposed to be coming, but they're not coming. So I know, on the Switch, I believe on the Switch, there's 2 fonts that you can choose from. There's classic and modern. That's not really an issue on Steam, because we can just go in and change whatever we want. Like, I've played through one of the Final Fantasies with like the Japanese version of the English text, which looks kind of classic and nice. I've used a Dragon Quest version of text in one of them. There's like countless. You just go online and download whatever you want. You just pop it in the file and it takes like 2 seconds, and you don't have to do anything. It's just like drag and drop, and you're playing with the new font. So no issues there, which is good. I know in the Switch version, you can choose between the original music or the orchestral, which is not an option in Steam yet. I would appreciate having the option when it comes, because I think I probably would switch back and forth. I definitely enjoyed the orchestral. I'd probably play the majority of my playthrough that way. But I mean, there's the nostalgia factor of like, it would be nice to hear like the NES chiptune style too at times. So
I found myself switching back and forth just to kind of compare them side by side like that. I think the orchestral is great. I think that it does a good job of kind of carrying forward the spirit of the original versions, but also making it, just feel a little bit more modern, has a little more depth to it. You know, obviously, you know, we like our beeps and our bloops, but if for people who didn't grow up with that stuff, you might not be as into it, right? So definitely, you know, having that choice is great. You mentioned the 2 fonts that are available in the Switch version. I can't believe that the modernized font even exists. It's such an abomination. Like, it really is terrible. Like, if there's anyone out there playing with it, you know, I'd love to hear from you what you like about it, or why it works for you. I found it so unappealing. Not just from like that it doesn't really fit an RPG. Like, I don't want to read it. Like, I don't find it attractive on the screen.
I can't even remember, because I just remember seeing it once and thinking like, nope. And then
it just feels so, thin. It feels like
that's it, thin. Yeah. Like, skinny.
If I saw it on a mobile game, I'd think this mobile game is like a ripoff. I think it's a ripoff of something else. Like, it looks fake almost, you know. The classic is fine. Like, I think it's a massive improvement over the modernized, for sure. Yeah, I don't think it's the best font style I've ever seen or something, but I think it works well enough. You know, I'd love to see more options. And it's nice, you know, if you're playing on Steam, you can kind of just drag and drop whatever font you want. But yeah, at least they added the classic version to the Switch and PS4 releases. That was a good thing for sure.
Yeah. And I definitely would have liked to have had the random encounters turned off and the XP boosts for my Final Fantasy IV at the very end of that run.
Yes,
that would have been pretty useful, because I got to the end and I got just freaking crushed by the boss, and So I'm like, okay, well, I guess I'm going to have to do a little bit of grind. And it wasn't the end of the world, but I definitely would have liked that it was 45 minutes back.
Yeah, it's a pretty tough final dungeon. A lot of these games do feature a pretty tough final dungeon. One, you know, definitely, I had to do a ton. Maybe we can get into the game here. I played my playthrough was three black belts and a black mage. I kind of wimped out of doing four black belts. I think it was harder. It might have been harder going with the black mage because I was always trying to keep him alive. And you know, you have to hunt around for the spells you want to get, and then you have to worry about the spell charges and stuff like that. So, helpful to wipe out lots of enemies all at once, like with Fire 2 or something like that. The multi-target spells are really helpful. What he ended up being the most helpful for at the end was buffing my black belts, who ended up becoming is it Master? I don't know what the name is. If that's the same name in the re-release of the game,
I don't usually
Thief play Ghost and Ninja Black.
It's not Monk, is it?
It might be Monk to something. Yeah, I don't think they use Black.
The other thing is some of the things were changed from the original too. Like the I know like a few of the items, like I think Matoya's, I can't remember if the eye got changed or something, but the drink to wake up,
the Jolt Tonic.
Yeah, Jolt Tonic. I don't like it.
I'm not a fan of it.
No, I don't know why things like that got changed, but
yeah, it's weird. Yeah. Like, what was wrong? It was like a sleeping herb or something like that. Like, or
yeah, it was the, well, the herb was herb, the herb yeah. was yeah, the herb would wake him up. So I don't know why they needed Jolt Tonic over herb.
Maybe it's the association with drugs or something. I have no idea. Oh, yeah, just spitballing, but yeah. So black belt becomes Monk. I think it's still okay. So it goes
thief
from being
ninja, right?
Thief to ninja. So black belt, they changed the name to Monk in the later. So it's Monk as it is right now in 2023. It went from being Master to Grandmaster, I think, is the difference. So, they just added the word Grand, I guess, for whatever reason. But get you know my final party: three Grandmasters and one Black Wizard. I had to do a ton of grinding to finally beat Chaos. And it is fine again. The way you've got these boost features to increase encounters and stuff like that. Increase experience points and gold did make that go pretty fast. But I probably spent about an hour, maybe an hour and a bit, grinding up in the Chaos Shrine before I ended up taking on Chaos. But I hadn't done a very thorough job of like finding like the best items or having a lot of kind of spare things to items to use. In the battle, I was kind of running out of potions by the end. I did run out of potions entirely. So as part of my grinding, when my characters got hurt, I had the items that you use them in battle, the equipment, I should say, where you use it as an item and then it heals you a little bit, right? The heal helmet or heal glove or Zeus glove or something like that. You know, some of those items that have magical spells attached to them. So I was using that to heal a little bit and, yeah, I was happy to finally take him down, but it did take a little bit of grinding. And I really didn't grind much at all in this version. I had encounters turned off for the most part. I would turn them on and do a few battles before some of the boss fights. But I did have some good moments, taking down Lich or it's not Carrie. It's the second boss, the fire boss. It's name.
Yeah,
Dang. Yeah. I hate these name changes. Like I'm just so stuck on the NES version names, but
yeah, anyway, it's like
the
Lich,
second boss,
Kraken,
the second Tiamat, they're all the same. Yeah. They just changed the second one from Carrie to something else. I don't know what, but
yeah. I'll look it up while you
look it up. But anyway, so yeah, I a couple of those bosses, like it took me down to like my last character was alive, I need the last hit to succeed or not, and it does, and I end up taking them down. So still had some of those classic wonderful RPG the last ditch effort moments that we love to happen. Going through the game again, it kind of felt and this is the first time I've ever really noticed this in particular, it felt like just going through the motions a bit. Like I know so well about where to go, what to do next, that in adding that to turning off the encounters and the sprinting function, I'm just flying through this game, I'm finishing it in 5 hours or less. It just kind of felt like I'm playing it on, like, it's like I'm watching a speed run of the game. I'm just, my brain is tuned out and I'm just going through, you know, the steps to get the boat, get the airship, get, you know, to do all the dungeons, light up all the crystals or restore the crystals or whatever. So
how long was your playthrough?
I don't have my Switch with me. I can't tell you, but I'm pretty sure it was under 5 hours. I think it was, it might've been 3.5 or 4 or something. It was pretty quick for sure.
Yeah. I think when I did mine, I think I was around 8. Yeah. Something.
And without the features that we mentioned, the quality of life stuff, that makes sense.
Although I did manage to get to, I got the Rat's Tail before, so after the first, after getting the first crystal, but before the first three. And I don't think I've ever done that before.
Yeah. So and you beat Lich and then you got the airship and then you...
Yep. Then I directly went and got the Rat's Tail because I'm just going to become an adult as soon as possible.
It was definitely the first thing I did after I got the airship. Like I beelined it to the Dragon Islands.
The Fiend of Fire was renamed from Kerry to Merilith.
Merilith, yeah. I knew it had Lith at the end. I just can't remember that one. I will never for the rest of my life remember Merilith. I just won't.
No.
But Kerry, I will. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I like doing that too. Getting, you know, the class change as soon as you can. I think it's especially helpful for the monks, maybe, just because their power comes from hitting more times. And so as you level up and maybe as you promote your class, you get to hit more times for more damage. And I had them, you know, wielding no weapons and just using their fists like really early on in the game, probably as soon as like the third town of the game, the third city, after I got the boat and went south to the elf town. I think I was already at that point using just their fists. So I had their fists and then I had my black mage with some decent spells for the Marsh Cave. And yeah, I lost to the, I don't know if they're called wizards or whatever they are, the ones guarding the crown. I lost one time and then I had to go back and do it again. But the second time I just crushed them. Like I did a tiny bit of grinding and beat the crap out of them. But
well, the quick save feature is definitely useful too, because you could technically like just quick save in front of a boss and then you don't have to like go through the whole dungeon again from wherever your last save was. I guess in the Final Fantasy 1, true saves you can do on the map. But I mean, if you're kind of a purist, I guess it would only be the inns and the towns technically.
I think the Pixel Remaster, if I'm not mistaken, I think it has an auto save as well. I know it has the quick function, but I think it might also auto save for you as well.
Yeah, I think it does.
So as soon as you go like a new floor, like go up or downstairs or something, or maybe it might even be go into a different room, it might do an auto save for you. So that's helpful if you forget to quick save. But I like how quick save has become like you can quick save and still play. If you remember games from the past where you'd quick save and it would take you to the menu, like I always hated that. I'm like, I want to just, you know, make a marker here, you know, like
a recent modern game.
I think it is a recent thing. Yeah, for
sure. Wasn't it? It was Persona 3.
Yeah, yeah.
Persona 3. If you tried to do a quick save, it would kick you out of the game.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And I mean, Persona 3, like the original game, I guess, isn't super new or something. But yeah, you'd think maybe with the re-releases, they would have made it the quick save that we like. Yeah, and I think they probably just want to, you know, maintain the difficulty of the game and all that stuff. But
yeah.
But with Pixel Remasters, you know, some really nice, really, really nice quality of life features that I think just make these games very easy to recommend to people. And I think even if you have played them before, I think it's just a fun way to revisit them, even if they are lacking some of that content. Like just going through the game again was fun. Like I liked going from beginning, middle, and end. Just hearing the new version of the music was great. Kind of seeing the spell effects and seeing the different areas and bosses in HD. Like that, all of that was fun to me. Like I like the artwork on the enemies. I've always liked it, but just kind of remembering how they've changed them from the NES version to some of the new sprites, the new names for enemies and stuff too. It's all just kind of just neat to see, I guess.
Well, and there's a lot of other, like in the original, you had to have the manual to know what the actual attributes of any of the weapons were. And now you can just hit optimize and it just does it for you.
Yeah.
Which it sometimes is good. Sometimes not. Like when I was playing Final Fantasy IV, it kept optimizing the staff for, Oh man, I've already blanked on
Rydia, Tella, Rosa.
Rosa.
Yeah. As opposed to a bow and arrow.
Yes, I wanted the bow and arrow, and every time I went to optimize, it just kept sticking me with the staff. I'm like, no, I want the bow and arrow. Well, and her ability is aim, so it's like, I want the bow and arrow. But it's still nice because you go into the menu and it'll show you what the stats are and how it works and stuff. So you don't have to have the manual around, even though it's a very nice manual.
I mean, there was a lot of broken stuff in this first game that I think they've fixed for the most part. Like I can't think of off the top of my head just any major issues from the first game that got replicated here. I think the stats that didn't work or weapons that didn't work properly or whatever, I think all of that has been adjusted here. So that's a nice thing as well. If you're coming off just playing the NES version.
Did you run into the super boss? I can't think of its name now. The big robot in the Sky Tower.
Something mech, Astromech or something like that. Yeah. Or Warmech.
Warmech, yeah.
Yeah, no, I didn't. And truthfully, I probably had encounters turned off as I was heading to TMS. That might have been the reason.
Oh, yeah.
Or I might have like just walked down that hallway like one time. I'm like, if I find him, you know, I've got my random encounters on. And if I find him, I find him. If I don't, I don't. But yeah, I don't know if they've increased the chances of running into Warmech in that hallway. I'm not sure, but
pretty sure I got wrecked in my Steam replay of on the way there.
I imagine that he probably would have been the toughest thing I would have faced up to that point in the game. I think Warmech might even be tougher than Tiamat. I don't remember.
Because he's got that
nuking ability that he uses, right? Which is what makes him so dangerous. Like I played a bunch of the bosses and I felt like the AI just wasn't very good. Like Kraken did like nothing against me. There were no like multi-hit and it wasn't using like lightning spells against me or anything I was using against him. I found some of the bosses not giving their best, I guess, in their battles against me.
That's for sure. Like if you're coming in to be like, oh, you know, I want this old school challenge. It's like, no, this is not it at all. Like everything's been rebalanced. Like you're just gonna, like if you even have kind of a, you know, general sense of how the turn-based RPGs work, like you're probably gonna walk through the game pretty easily for the most part.
Yeah, and I feel like I already had that challenge when I played through the NES version with the classic console. Like I did that already. I did the whole thing. Obviously, like I knew where to go. I had to do the regular grinding. I probably didn't take like a novel team. I probably had like three warriors and a white mage or something easy like that. But I wasn't looking for a major challenge with this. I just wanted to go through it again so we could chat about it a little bit and kind of see what was different about it, see how the experience feels with some of these boost features. And I think what's funny to me, and we'll talk about this more in the FF3 episode, but just comparing the two games kind of more or less side by side, right? Like I played them within a week or two of each other. And I think that was the most glaring thing for me that kind of just opened my eyes about the first game. And again, the third one having such little exposure in the West due to just no very few re-releases of it. I mean, this is one of the major, this is really the only version of FF3 that we've gotten that tries to look like the NES version, you know, like it's kind of bringing that forward. We had the DS remake and stuff. Oh, again, yeah, we'll save that.
It was like a 3D version, so it didn't.
It's very, 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 very different. I think that mobile version was based on that remake as well. So, but yeah, just kind of seeing them side by side and kind of these being the two first kind of showing off of job classes and choosing kind of which class you're going to get. I do think 3s is just so much more sophisticated than 1, but just 1 again, you know, and we've said this ad nauseum on this podcast that, you know, what 1 FF1 has contributed to the genre, just how special it's been, I'm sure, and influential on other game makers and other series like that can't be understated. And it is definitely still worth playing. I think it's a breeze, honestly. Like, I don't think it's super hard in this version to figure out where to go. And it also doesn't take you a lot of time to figure all that out. You know, you just talk to people in the villages. They're pretty good about kind of steering you where to go. And until you get the airship, the world's pretty closed off. You know, it's not a huge map. It really isn't. Even when you do get the airship.
You can't get lost. Like,
no, not until you can't. Yeah. So we're going to wrap up soonish, but so who was in your party for your playthrough, your recent playthrough of the game?
So I always pretty much go with two warriors, a white mage and a black mage. So that's what I did in my Steam version of the game. Cause I like to have the two, cause the warriors are always like the most powerful. So I like having two to really mess up the enemies. And then I always like to have the healer and the magic user. You know, back in the day in the Final Fantasy, like when I was playing on NES, like if I was playing the true NES version, typically I'll swap one of the warriors for a thief, just because if you have the thief as a leader, it's easier, or the percentage of running away from battles is much higher with the thief as the leader. So sometimes I would go with that just to have that extra ability to leave. So that I, because you know, if you, there's no skipping random encounters in the NES, so you don't want to be fighting all the time in the dungeons. So it was nice to have that. And then when you do the job class upgrade, like the ninja is pretty powerful. I'm pretty sure the ninja is the only one that can use the Masamune at the end too.
I think one of the wizards can use it too. He might be the only kind of fighter type class that can use it, or maybe he uses it the best, but I seem to remember the white mage, white wizard being able to use it as well. The ninja, I think the ninja is good. I think the trouble with the thief class is just getting to that point, right? Because I was on PSP, if you remember, we talked about this. I did a 3 or 4 thief run before, and it's impossible. It's impossible. It's the hardest one for sure. Like they're just terrible. I don't know if it's the stat growth thing or just the types of weapons and equipment they can equip just not being very powerful. But yeah, that was so hard. I just gave up on it. But three black belts and either wizard or maybe even a white mage could work. I think the red mage, I meant. The red mage is probably the one I use the least, just because I don't like that jack of all trades type. I'd rather a specialist.
And you can't do the big moves at the end. Like, I don't think the red mage can do nuke. I don't think they can do the life 3. Like,
yeah. So you kind of cap out at like the level 5-ish spells.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you're not. What are you actually doing at the end to beat chaos? You know, maybe you're using your fire 2, ice 2, if you can even get it, or your attack is going to be middling as well. So, I always just kind of moved away wasn't really interested in that class. I think they can make the beginning part of the game easier for sure, because they're versatile. Just not super helpful late game. And I think the late game is where you really need the stronger characters to beat chaos. And then refighting all the fiends in the chaos temple is pretty tough too. So
yeah. Well, I think that pretty much covers. I know we've covered Final Fantasy.
We've definitely talked about it a bunch before, so we don't need to go through the whole plot of the game or anything like that. You know, like we've definitely chatted about that for sure.
No, but yeah, definitely nice to have it on Switch and PlayStation. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking forward to right now. So I've played through 1 through 4. I've completed 1 through 4, and then I just started 5 the other day.
Okay.
And when I played 6, I got about 75% of the way through. So. I'll end up going back to that when I finish 5, but it's just they're excellent, and I think they did a great job, bringing back Shibuya. Is that her name?
The artist, the character artist.
Bringing back the original character artist to update all the assets, I think, was a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy like all the upgrades and. It's nice. It's funny that it took so long. We've been having fun for like 3 years.
Shibuya, Kazuka Shibuya. Yeah, you had
it. 3 years of having fun with.
Yeah, you know, yeah, teasing me, ripping me apart for thinking they would come earlier. And I was so convinced they were coming eventually. And I'm just glad to be at least partly vindicated by that. And I did look into the shipping beer thing, and it is illegal to ship any kind of alcohol within Canada. So apparently the way you get around that is you go to the liquor store and you ask them to ship it. So that might be an option.
Oh.
I have to look into that, or at some point I'm probably just going to buy you an LCBO gift card at this point. You know, that might just be easier for you, but
makes sense because there was a place, I think it was either in Michigan or Minnesota or something. Somebody was going to, like, there was a company down there that had heard the podcast and they wanted to send their beer to me to kind of promote or whatever. And I never, ever got it. And
I remember that happening. Yeah. I totally forgot to follow up on it.
I assume the customs agents had a cold one on me.
That could be very true. Yeah. Well, hopefully they're listening to the podcast at the very least. You know, they think we deserve that much. But yeah, I'm looking forward to playing all of the games soonish and talking about all of them. We're going to do an episode on all of them at some point. So stay tuned for these kind of mini episodes where we're just going to give our thoughts on games that we've played multiple times, dozens of times, it feels like, and some that we have maybe played zero times or just once or twice or maybe never even finished before. So yeah, so stay tuned, everybody, for those. Thanks for joining us for this mini episode on Final Fantasy 1 Pixel Remaster. Stay tuned for the next one in the series, and we'll talk to you all again soon. Bye for now.
Bye.